The Columbia Workshop.
Common soldier and knows the horrors of war, but now Russian communist influence must be driven forever from Europe. Disembodied voice reaching out across the land and oceans to the ear and mind of half the world. The voice of a man whose decree is death, whose secret meditations have brought slavery to the millions who have never seen him. A voice that has last moved 130 million Americans to seek the destruction of the thing it stands for and the man behind it, whom they have never seen. A voice speaking to us and threatening us from 3,000 miles away and in a foreign tongue, yet more familiar to us than the voice of Lincoln or of Theodore Roosevelt or Wilson, as well known as of friends or neighbors, thanks to a modern miracle, the radio. During the minutes that follow, the workshop asks you to believe that by this means of radio, we can conjure out of history another voice, a voice that also in its time possessed that fateful power to shape the destinies of men and nations. During these minutes, we ask you to believe that you are living 130 years ago. The year is 1812. You are sitting by your radio on a Friday evening at the close of the year 1812 and tuning in your favorite news program. You hear the familiar fanfare and the show begins.
History is on the march!
Today is December 31st, 1812. Today marks the close of a year that has been as momentous as any in human history. A year made memorable by the restless strivings of people and the leadership of strong men. James Madison, 4th President of the United States, let it be known once and for all that the freedom of the seas was a principle his countrymen would fight for. Simon Bolivar in South America, the priest Morales in Mexico, and this year made news and history by openly defying the power and majesty of Spain. Throughout the world, a dozen kings and potentates have led their armies on the battlefield. But far overshadowing all leaders and events in this year of 1812 has been one man, the little corporal who became an emperor, Napoleon Bonaparte. And for him, perhaps for all the civilized world, no year has been more fateful. Let us review this eventful year together now. The year 1812 of history is on the march. Moscow, the capital of all the Russias. It is January 6th, according to the calendar of St. Julian. And the bells of Moscow's 40 times 40 churches and cathedrals are ringing out the age-old joy of man in the divinity of their Savior. It is the Feast of the Epiphany. But for one man of Moscow, the holiness of this day has little meaning. A lone rider galloping at headlong speed under the great wall of the Kremlin towards the sentry at the White Gate.
Special courier to the Tsar.
Your papers.
Here they are.
All in order. Pass.
Down the wide thoroughfare from the gate to the entrance of the Imperial Palace. Up the broad steps, down the long, echoing corridor, through the double doors of the anteroom, to the Kremlin apartments of Alexander, Tsar of all the Russias.
Well, Captain, welcome. You have come far.
And fast, Your Highness.
And what brings you in such haste?
A matter which your ambassador to Paris did not even wish to commit to writing, Your Highness.
What is troubling, Kurakin?
It is the question of Your Majesty's alliance with Napoleon Bonaparte. Prince Kurakin is deeply concerned.
An alliance with Bonaparte is always a matter for concern.
He is raising an army, Your Highness. A greater army than has ever been seen before under the banners of France. He talks in public of an invasion of England, but he is not building ships. He is training cavalry.
Has Kurakin spoken with him lately?
Several times. Bonaparte complains that Russia is not conforming to the new order, his continental system, as he calls it. But aside from that, he professes the greatest love for Your Highness.
He has overrun every nation in Europe, and he has loved them all. Until the day he marched.
A fortnight ago, he was waiting on the Emperor in his study. Through the carelessness of a secretary, he saw what had been left on the Emperor's desk. Books of all kinds. And maps. Military maps. Of Russia.
Maps of Russia.
Yes, sir.
Well, Borodin, thanks for your information. You may tell Kurakin not to worry too much. Bonaparte will study his maps a long time before he knows as much about the steppes of Russia as we do.
From the Emperor's headquarters in Dresden, the 2nd, 5th, and 8th Cavalry of the 9th, 12th, 14th Artillery to take up designated stations on the Polish frontier.
From the Emperor Napoleon's headquarters in the East, all units of the Bavarian, Westphalian, and Prussian Guard to march at once for Danzig.
General order. From the headquarters of the Emperor Napoleon, Innsbruck. All units of the Grand Army, including all ammunition, trains, and transports, to converge on the left bank of the Niemen in the direction of Kovno by the evening of June the 22nd.
June the 22nd, General Headquarters, a large and comfortable inn near the frontier. Gathered in a spacious tap room that is doing more trade than ever before in its history, is a gay assembly of officers of the Grand Army, a few civilian notables, and two Viennese newspaper men.
Sherry, another round for these gentlemen.
Yes, Captain.
Rather a gay captain for a man going into battle.
Gay, why not? The little corporal is in the field again. The campaign will be glorious, brief, and I shall come home a field marshal.
You are very sure.
Why not? With this army, how long do you think it'll take us to trounce this Russian rabble? And then, do you know what then?
Then?
Yes, then we sail for England, eh, gentlemen?
I suppose there is no chance for a couple of journalists following you on this campaign.
What, into Russia? Oh, no. You may see the start. The Emperor will address the troops. You may see that. But once we've crossed the river, that's where we leave you.
That's so? It seems a pity.
I'll tell you what I'll do. I keep a diary. I'll give it to you to publish when I return.
Here are your drinks, gentlemen. I just hope you come back as soon as you think you will.
Oh, you will miss me, eh, Cherie?
Miss you? I'll miss the money you owe us.
Money? Why, you're making a fortune here.
Oh,
but
yes.
Don't you worry. I'll pay you when I come back.
Uh-huh.
You know what with?
What?
With a Russian crown jewel.
At ease, gentlemen. The Emperor merely wishes me to remind you that all units must be prepared to move at 5 in the morning.
Bravo!
Five a.m., the left bank of the Niemen River, the morning of June the 23rd. Standing on a gun carriage,
the short, stocky figure of Napoleon Bonaparte. And below him, as far as his eye can see, are the legions of the Grand Army, columns of men, of cavalry, artillery, transport, the dust of their march still drifting in a rolling cloud across the plains. It is the greatest army ever assembled in the history of modern warfare, the most powerful military machine the world has ever seen. Quietly, as is his custom, addressing only those nearest him, the Emperor begins to speak.
Soldiers, officers of the Grand Army, what we begin today is more than a campaign. It's a crusade. We alone, of all nations of the earth, dared to challenge this Russian barbarism which has threatened the peace and security of Europe for so long. The hopes of the Christian world go with us, of all but England. And believe me, her time will come. The sun of Austerlitz is rising in the east today. Within a month, your victories will have surpassed anything you've ever known. Your rewards will be those of the invincible conquerors you are. Soldiers of the Grand Army, forward to immortality!
Forward to immortality, the flower of Western Europe's youth. And in their knapsack, rations for 2 weeks. Moscow, the greatest Spensky Cathedral in the Kremlin, coronation place of Russian Tsars for more than 300 years, presiding at an extraordinary mass, which is high pontiff of his faith, he has himself this day ordained, is the Tsar Alexander. Below him, filling the great cathedral to the doors, are members of the imperial family, foreign emissaries, lords and ladies of the court, and representatives of the people of Russia.
My loyal subjects, I stand before you today, not only as your Tsar, but as your leader on the field of battle. We are not fighting for ourselves alone in this great struggle. With our victory will come the liberation of all Europe from this tyrant's grasp. And come our victory will. There are no armies in the world that are invincible. This day, in a righteous cause, we have been forced to draw the sword. And this day I swear to you most solemnly that we shall not sheathe it until the last enemy has been driven from our soil.
Bulletin from the headquarters of the Commander-in-Chief on the Eastern Front. August 18th. The Grand Army of France has invested Smolensk. The enemy's losses in attempting to defend it were enormous. This large city is the gateway to the interior of Russia. No further serious resistance is to be expected.
Bulletin from the Eastern Front, September 7th. A great battle of annihilation has been fought at Borodino in the Mozhaisk area. The enemy has suffered an incalculable defeat. His armies have been completely destroyed. His power to resist has been utterly broken.
Bulletin, September 14th. The spires of Moscow are in sight. The city will be invested before nightfall. Victory is ours.
Gates of Moscow, standing among his aides, watching his soldiers in parade formation, marching into this great city that he has crossed 500 miles of hostile territory to reach, is the Emperor Napoleon.
Well, Polanco, what's keeping them?
I cannot say, Your Highness.
Surely the prominent citizens of the place will wish to seek my protection.
It would seem so, Captain. Your Highness.
Yes, Highness.
Send out another patrol to find the delegation of citizens. Tell them I wish to see them here at once.
Heavens, are they not the representatives of a conquered nation? Will they expect me to seek them? As it occurred to Your Highness, it's just barely possible.
Well, what? Speak up, man. What's barely possible?
That the Russians intend to continue fighting.
Fighting? Now, how can they continue fighting? They've lost the capital, haven't they? And then they've lost the war. They've got the super peace. Well, a man of right?
It would seem so, Your Highness.
Here is Vera. He was close to the city. He should have some word. Well, Vera! Vera, my loyal Muscovite! They're delaying entrance!
I was just coming to inform Your Highness.
What?
If Your Highness will prepare himself for some rather unpleasant news.
Unpleasant news?
Yes, Your Highness. There will be no delegation of citizens. There are no citizens. Moscow is as empty as a tomb.
Moscow, midnight, September the 15th. In a suburb of the city, two sentries exchange greetings.
Sergeant.
Ah, Gustav. What's the news?
The same. Nothing.
Oh, it gets a little colder these nights, eh?
They say it gets cold. Is Moscow in winter?
Ladies, we'll be home in a month.
Say, What's that?
Some fella running out of that house. You! Halt! Halt, I say!
Let him go. Some poor devil trying to steal a loaf of bread.
There'll be plenty of hunger here after the army leaves.
It's been a bad campaign. Not like the others.
Look, that house.
Fire! It must have been that fellow we saw.
The clumsy fool! There's a wind tonight, too. If we hadn't been here, the whole quarter might have caught before anyone noticed.
Maybe he wasn't so clumsy.
Who's that? You don't think. Look over there. And there. Other fire. Come on, we'd better call the guard.
The Kremlin. The apartment taken over by the Emperor. 1 o'clock in the morning. The Marquis de Caulaincourt enters the bedchamber of Napoleon.
Your Highness! Your Highness!
First, what is it?
I think you had better get up. Highness.
What time is it? Still night, isn't it?
Yes, Your Highness. But
what's the matter?
Your Highness will step over to the window.
Window? Oh, adios, you man. Where am I sitting? Seems bright outside. This time of night.
Yes, Highness.
How long has this been going on?
Oh, almost an hour, as it appears.
The whole city is in flames.
Yes, Highness.
The city in flames.
Yes.
Look at it. One of the noblest cities in the world. In flames. Terrible sight. A sublime sight, Caulaincourt.
Yes.
And terrible. And frightening.
There, come in.
We've got one of the arsonists, Your Highness.
Bring him near, so I can see his face.
Down on your knees, dog, it's the Emperor.
Why did you do it? Why did you do it? Take him out and shoot him. Shoot every one of them, you can lay your hands on!
Yes, Your Highness. Come along, you.
To destroy their finest city. One of the loveliest cities in Europe. It seems so senseless. Why would they do it?
When the cold comes, and the snows, and there's no shelter for our troops, I fear we shall know soon enough why.
Near the border of the Duchy of Poland, first great city to be occupied by the forces of Napoleon. At the palace of the Duke of Bassano, representative of the Emperor in Vilna, a grand ball is being held, first to usher in the coming holiday season.
Ladies and gentlemen, stop the music, please. Ladies and gentlemen, your attention, please. Ladies and gentlemen, I have just received word from the Eastern Front. The Grand Army is in retreat. There have been a series of disasters and the bitter cold and the enemy have taken a very heavy toll of the Emperor's forces. It is not known yet how serious the defeat may be. But it is thought that the Emperor may not be able to rally his forces until he reaches the German frontier. And that the Russians may be here in Vilna within a fortnight.
As with half-frozen fingers, I scratch these words in my diary. I can but dimly remember that these are the scenes of our victories only a few short weeks ago. The dead still lie unburied on the ground, covered already with a thin blanket of snow. The march is endless. There is no warmth anywhere in the world. There is no food. On every side, their comrades sink to the ground to rest and fall into the frozen sleep of death. Those who leave the line of march to forage are killed or captured by the swarms of Cossacks who appear and disappear like ghosts and who hunt us down like animals. What horses are left, they've already eaten. We entered this terrible land 500,000 strong. There are less than 50,000 of us alive today. If any of these starving, freezing men are ever to see home again, the merciful God must deliver.
Saxony, an army post. It is an early hour of the morning. A closed carriage on sleigh runners draws up in the yard. Two muffled figures step out, go up to the darkened door.
Open up! Have you no sentries here? Open!
What do you want?
Who are you?
Tell us, men, we want a change of horses.
Turn out. This is an army post, the property of the Emperor.
I am the Emperor. Hurry, we've no time to talk.
Your Highness, I thought... But where is the army?
Never mind that, we want horses.
But Your Highness... I should make some provision if the Grand Army should...
Silence! Get us the horses.
There is no Grand Army.
Paris, a heavy coach, clatters through the great main gate of the Tuileries, draws up before the palace steps. It is just a quarter to midnight, December the 18th, 1812.
Calling, monsieur. Calling your highness.
Where is the empress?
Where is she?
She has retired, your highness.
No, wait here, Kolenko.
Joshua, what is it? Who's there?
Yes, poor madame.
The... Oh, dear.
Madam.
Oh, it's been so long. I thought, we all thought, that you were in Russia.
I was in Russia. It's good to be home again, Mary.
Emperor has come home, but of more than 500,000 men who left their wives and children to follow him 6 months ago, less than 20,000 still struggling through the snows of Poland will ever return.
His Majesty, the Emperor.
This week of December 1812, the Emperor Napoleon stands before his Chamber of Deputies. And even upon these subservient men, a premonition of disaster has thrown a cast of doubt and fear. For this week, for the first time in his career, the Emperor, who has fed and grown on victories, must explain defeat.
Once more, under my personal supervision, the many affairs of state which our campaigns in the East have caused me to neglect. As for the war in Russia, it will long be glorious in our history. My armies have suffered losses. But it was not the forces of the enemy which caused them, but whether of such bitter intensity and has never before been known. There are some malcontents among us who still complain. These are none other than the remnants of those bloody revolutionaries of 1789, exponents of those shaky theories of popular government which we have crushed once, will, if need be, crush again. Let not these enemies, or the English, or any others, rejoice at any misfortune of ours. In the spring, our armies, redoubled in strength and arms, will again take the field. Again they will surge forward, and they will bring to Europe that security and peace that I have promised. Our peace that will endure unshakable for 1,000 years.
Christmas week of 1812, the bells of Moscow, 40 times 40 churches and cathedrals, ring out the hours heralding the birth time of the Prince of Peace. The voice of Russia's people is raised in jubilation for the freedom so dearly bought in blood and courage and scorched earth. And this Christmas week of 1812, for the first time in 6 long years, there is hope again in Europe. For although Europe's master has promised new wars, new offensives, and new bloodshed for the spring, the people of Russia have answered for all the world in this year of 1812 the legend of invincibility, have restored again the lagging confidence of men that liberty, equality, fraternity have not yet vanished from the earth, that over tyranny a united and courageous people may yet triumph, and that men in future times will once more live their lives in dignity, in freedom, and in peace. On the march.
This is Konstantin Fedosey of the Consulate General of the USSR speaking. The Columbia Workshop has brought you a broadcast such as you might have heard if radio had existed in the year 1812. There is this to say as we listen 130 years later. Hitler, posing as a 20th century Napoleon, is nothing but a miserable caricature of Napoleon. The armies of Napoleon were made up of soldiers. Hitler's armies are composed of wild beasts, in comparison with whom even highwaymen seem to be honest people. 1812 is not the year of 1941 or 1942. The mighty Red Army is not the Russian army of 1812. The Russians of 1812 were ruled by the Tsar. The Soviet people are ruled by a government of the people, by the people, and for the people. And if Napoleon lost both army and throne in Russia, the present invader, accustomed to fight only unarmed people, will crack his shins all the more. I want to say to you tonight that those fighting countrymen of mine salute you with heartfelt warmth for the help you are sending them through Russian war relief. No matter how many thousands of miles divide us, a common aim unites us.
The Columbia Workshop play this evening was broadcast from the year 1812 by Robert L. Richards. Music was by Howard Barlow. John Dietz directed. The production was under the supervision of William Speer. This is the Columbia Broadcasting System.